Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Klink.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's a Need to Know podcast. All thanks to the CIA Ops patron community. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, N2K Podcast, and online at ciaops.podbean.com.
Welcome along to a Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane. We're at episode 236, and joining me on the other side of the microphone there is Brenton Johnson. Welcome back.
Good to be back, Robert.
So, unfortunately, we are basically in the same state of affairs when it comes to the coronavirus and staying sanitized. Hopefully everything at your end is still positive. There is a lot of negativity around at the moment. We still don't know the end result of this. It's going to be a challenge, but working from home now, a lot of people seem to have adjusted to. How are you finding it now? What's probably week four of lockdown or week three of lockdown these days?
Yeah, it's week four for me because I was an early adopter to the whole lockdown thing. Interesting, there's 60% of Australians can work from home. So it's quite remarkable numbers. We've seen the rise of Zoom, which has been hilarious, and people not realizing that they have video conferencing on their computer and then going, oh, can you install Zoom? I'm like, I can, but can you read these articles from all the top cybersecurity bodies first and then sign off on the risk? And they're like, yeah, we don't care. Zoom. I'm like, okay. for the most part, it's been fairly tame. You know, most of our customers are zero trust anyway, so it hasn't really registered too much. It's just really my own sanity of sitting around the home and you know, getting out for walks every day and just trying to keep active and trying to keep keep moving. Has been the main thing. How about yourself, Robert?
Well, again, you get a bit of cabin fever, I think, sitting in the same room, looking at the same screens, and you do go for a walk and do a bit of exercise and read, do a few other things. But again, it does begin to get a little bit claustrophobic. I think that people who aren't used to working from home for extended periods, again, are going to obviously struggle. We see that if you've got kids, a husband, all these other things all under one roof, all trying to use the same internet to get work done, to stay basically distracted, then again, it's going to be a big challenge. I think that not knowing exactly how long this is going to last makes it very difficult for a lot of people. But luckily, we've still got the ability, obviously, to go shopping and do that. And in Australia, at least, it seems that we are now well on top of the infections. We're not obviously out of the woods, but we are much better off than we were. But the question then comes again to the certainty of when all of this is going to end. Now, speaking of that, it's very interesting that Microsoft came out and said they are not planning to run any face-to-face events until July 2021. So again, they will obviously reevaluate that over time. But that's a pretty big statement when you think about it. They're not prepared to run any. So Inspire's not going to be on, Ignite's potentially not going to be on, Build, all of those face-to-face events are going virtual. From Microsoft's point of view, so that is a huge change, and obviously they need to book venues and arrange stuff well in advance, so they're getting out in front of this early. So I'm sure a lot of other suppliers, a lot of other vendors will be doing this as well, but that's going to be a major impact, I think, for quite an extended period of time. And it goes back to this: how do we effectively network in inverted commas when we aren't at these sort of events? So that's going to be, I think, a big challenge going forward, and a lot of people look forward to some of the very large events. But I think also, too, I heard a comment which is interesting. This may give Microsoft the excuse to pull all of those events into one super mega event, being basically Ignite. So Build will go into Ignite. All the other stuff will go into one super mega conference that Microsoft run once a year in the US. So we'll see how that goes, but that's sort of the position that Microsoft's taken. I know a lot of other companies are going virtual as well. Have you partaken in any, meetings or those sort of things from vendors so far, Brenton?
Same old webinars and stuff. I've been poking my head in those, but you know, nothing that would have been in person that's gone virtual, I've really seeked out. I'm doing so much video conferencing and phone and all of this that I'm kind of over it, to be honest. I want to just get out, walk around the lake, listen to podcasts, and just, you know, do that sort of a thing. So the idea of sitting at home watching a webinar is not my idea of a good time, and everyone's doing it at the moment, and I think people will get fatigued with that.
Everybody's not doing it well either. I think that's the other challenge as well. I think a lot of people are undertaking doing webinars for the first time, and again, they aren't doing it, you know, as well as they could be because they treat it like an in-person event or something. So yeah, there are some challenges, certainly some challenges there. Now, probably best to launch into some news. There are some important items. Now, obviously, the number one item, which I don't think we talked about last time, was the renaming of the Office 365 business SKUs to Microsoft 365. So basically, the Business Essentials and Business Premium have now moved to a Microsoft 365 naming conventions. There are now three Microsoft 365 business SKUs. What is it? What's this? I think it's called this. Is it basic or standard? Then, a basic, a standard, and then a premium. And that transition happens, I think, on the 21st of April. And that would indicate to me that all the other SKUs, the enterprise SKUs, are probably going to be renamed to Microsoft 365 business as well. So, yeah, what's your take on these this renaming thing that Microsoft's undertaken?
I think it's good. I think it's going to cause a lot of confusion in the marketplace around, you know, what used to be Office 365 Business Premium is now going to be Microsoft 365 Business. What's Microsoft 365 Business is now going to be Microsoft 365 Business Premium. Those sorts of things are going to be very challenging for people. They usually just hear the 365. People have, you know, just called it 365. That being said, if you think outside of your immediate 12-month period of change, the naming convention makes a lot more sense. So rather than having a conversation about what's the difference between Office 365 and Microsoft 365, you just say, hey, there's three plans. One is web apps, SharePoint, you know, file storage, email. You know, for a basic sort of worker that's not an information worker, if you need desktop apps, that's an extra $10 a month. And if you need security over the top of it, you can step up to the premium, which comes with security and device management and those sorts of things. So that's a much easier conversation than trying to explain, so you have Office 365 and Microsoft 365, and have you heard of Microsoft 365 and blah, 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 like all of this sort of stuff. Now it's just, it's an easy step up in price. You know, it's about $10 every jump. And it makes sense to explain to people. The naming convention aligns to the value proposition, which I think is the problem that they were having. People go, oh, well, I'm already on the premium product. Why would I go down to the business product? And that I heard that's just the Office apps. And it's like, no, that's Office 365 business. Microsoft 365 business is business premium plus security. And they're like, what? All of that is very, very positive, I think. But it's going to be painful in the short term. But I think now that we're very much settled in this cloud productivity space, it's going to make a big difference. And we need to start putting in the big rock foundations now so we don't have this confusion forever. So a little bit of short-term pain for long-term game, in my opinion.
Yeah, so just to be clear, Office 365, and we'll put the link in the show notes, Office 365 Business Essentials, which was the web version of everything, is now Microsoft 365 Business Basic. Office 365 Business Premium, which was the desktop and the back-end web services, now become Microsoft 365 Business Standard. And the Microsoft 365 Business, which was the services, the desktop apps, plus basically the enterprise mobility suite on top, is now become Microsoft 365 Business Premium. So we now have, as Brenton indicates, a basic, a standard, a premium. I think they make a hell of a lot of sense, as you said, going forward. Yes, there will be some confusion initially with people that are transitioning, but I think in the long run, if you're playing the long game, it does make a lot of sense. And my gut feeling is that they will make the same changes to enterprise as well in the near future, I would guess. The other thing they've done, which I think to me is a little bit more confusing, maybe not to the people, most people, is the renaming of the just the pure desktop apps to Microsoft 365 apps. So that's an interesting one as well. So we'll put a link in the show notes so you can go and have a review. But at the end of the day, there are no functionality differences or changes between the two at this stage, but it's really, like I said, a moving towards a total Microsoft 365 brand rather than an Office 365, because now we're incorporating all the security and these add-ons. Now, to speak about some value adds that have come now to Microsoft 365 Business Premium, they've now included the full version of Azure AD P1. That is fantastic news. Now, the other thing I note also is they're now going to include the Microsoft Cloud Print is also going to come to Microsoft 365 Business Premium as well. So you'll be able to use the new Microsoft Cloud Printing service with your Microsoft 365 Business Premium. Azure AD P1 is also included. So that's going to give you things like dynamic groups and a number of other, a few other missing features, and again, make it much easier to sell and to understand, I think. So this sort of all works in, I think, into this Microsoft 365 rebranding as well. So what's your thoughts on the addition of Azure AD P1?
Oh, I think from a simplicity point of view, it's really good, because we're having these conversations with customers where it'd be like, now you get P1, but only parts of P1, and they go, which parts? And it's like, well, I'll have to look it up every time because they keep adding and changing it or adding new things to it. So things like conditional access, when initially in Microsoft 365 Business, there was lots of features that are really key to the value proposition of Microsoft 365 Business that just weren't included when it first launched, you know, things like ATP and stuff. So it was very difficult. Now it's just, okay, you get P1. So everything that you were talking about, you know, it's just less things to remember, less exceptions. And when you're trying to troubleshoot stuff, it makes things a lot easier too. So this article is quite good in a sense. It points out a few good capabilities that are coming. So cloud app security, cloud app discovery, I should say. So you can see what's going on in your environment, who's doing what. You'll get the application proxy, the dynamic groups, and passwordless authentication. So all of this sort of stuff makes things a lot easier when you're talking to people. I don't know how much of a difference it's going to make. Certainly some customers will be impacted a lot, but I think it's going to be much more of a bump for the service providers who no longer have to figure out what's in, what's out, and then explain that to the customer. So much easier just to say, you know, you get P1, it's worth $8 a month or something. It's basically worth jumping up to business Microsoft 365 Business Premium from Microsoft 365 Business Standard, because you're going to pay that anyway to jump up to P1. So those sorts of conversations become so much easier. I think it's great. Not much more to say on it, really.
So again, I think that's that alignment piece that we've been talking about. You know, it's going to include the full one of this, the full one of that, the full one of this. So that makes it much easier to understand and remove some of that complexity, as you said. Now, I noticed in the notes here, you've got some things that are coming shortly to Teams, you can probably let people know about. So what do we have on the roadmap that people should be seeing very shortly in their Microsoft Teams meetings?
All right. So I just want to do a bit of because Teams has become such a massive part of what everyone is doing, I want to do a quick recap of some of the stuff that's happened this year. 13th of December last year, you can get it on Linux. I'm sure that'll make a big difference to people. So you got display names in Teams, Windows Server gets the desktop app of Teams, Red Receipts, I bet that's pretty cool for a lot of people, pin your favorite apps, editing, so you can now edit stuff, which is cool, you can tag, mention a group, role, department, etc. You can work offline now in Teams, which is pretty cool. There's a lot of people who live and die by the offline mode in Outlook because they don't want to be hassled, but all their work is in there, so they have to have Outlook open, so they put it in offline mode. So that's kind of cool. Improvements for the team calendar, and now you can end the meeting for everybody, which is kind of cool. So that's what's happened. What's coming up is we're going to have background effects in Teams meetings. So for those who remember when Microsoft released the blurring of the video, one of the ways they promoted is there was a news anchor in the UK and he was working from home and this kid came in and just started screaming in the background and all of that sort of thing. And Microsoft put the blur around the background. So it's like, oh, this is what it looks like with the blur. So now they're extending that capability. People are very, it says it's very heavily popular blur feature. So you can put in your new background.
Custom, basically a custom background. So you can look as though you're in the office or at the beach. Everybody, anytime you're on a Teams meeting with somebody from Microsoft, you always see them with a custom background. I will note briefly that that blurring actually came from an engineer at Microsoft who was basically deaf. Now, when they met on Teams with their parents over in India, they were distracted by all the other stuff going on in around the meeting. So she basically went in and programmed it to have the blur so she could just focus on a parent speaking. It was like very interesting that, you know, such an inclusive, you know, requirement has now proved so popular. So again, we should see that hopefully in April. You can add your own custom backgrounds. So again, I haven't seen that in my tenant and hopefully it won't be too far away. So what else have we got there?
We've got the new experience for launching instant channel meetings. So that's, have you seen this one yet pop up in your tenant?
Yeah, look, there's been a couple little bits and pieces. You get them, and there are, like I said, I think the end meeting is very good because, again, if you leave a meeting and someone stays in there or they haven't disconnected, then that meeting continues on and on and on and on. You can also, like I said, with this end meeting, you can force people to get out. One of the things you can also do is you can now basically make somebody an attendee. One of the things that is also coming is the hand up, so raise the hand. So if you do have a question, you can basically go in and raise your hand and then that can be answered. Now, for anybody who's been on a Teams meeting with, you know, 50, with a lot of people, that can be a challenge when you're working with a large group. Everybody's trying to talk over the top. So the raise the hand feature is a nice one that'll be added shortly. So I think there's a lot of this. To an extent, you've got to realize that, I suppose, initially Teams really wasn't designed for, you know, this sudden uptake. And there are a lot of features on the roadmap, but good on Microsoft. They're bringing a lot of these forward because people are asking for them, like the custom backgrounds, raised hand, end meeting, those sort of things. So there are a lot of these sort of features we should expect to see before the end of this month. And I would expect Teams to keep adding more and more features. Again, it's very much in the spotlight and the amount of users keeps growing day in and day out. So again, a good opportunity to start rolling out some of these things, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so another one from me that I found basically here is there's been a couple of Microsoft articles about, you know, setting up a home business or working from home, and also how you can, as an IT department, effectively support your mobile worker. This will be a challenge for many people because they will come to a PC, which is normally a home PC. They'll be expecting to do work, and how is it secure? How is the company information locked down? Microsoft's got some good articles there to help people understand what the challenges are and how to, again, make these more secure. One of the other ones that I'm really keen to see and can't wait to get my hands on is Project Cortex. So Project Cortex will basically take information stored in your environment and kind of build an intranet for you on the fly, customized to your own needs. And I think we're going to see that in a short order of time, and it'll be really good to see how that works, what it does, how effective it is. That may change the collaboration approach in this modern age where you don't have to worry about building necessarily an intranet. It's built for you on the fly with AI, so that's pretty interesting. We'll also pop some articles in there for you to have a look at around the security of Microsoft Teams. So given Zoom's challenges, Microsoft came out with a response saying, look, this is how we secure Teams, this is what we comply with. So if you do need to compare one with the other, there are some articles there from Microsoft that you can go in and have a look at. There's a few updates on the OneDrive roadmap. There's some, for example, dark mode coming to Android. So have a look at those. I expect more and more stuff again to come out for OneDrive shortly. Again, I think Microsoft are very focused at the moment on making sure Teams is up and running and working and Azure's working and all this sort of stuff, because the demand has increased dramatically. So let's keep our fingers crossed that they make sure that all of that's working. The other one that I thought was interesting is the general availability now of the robotic process automation, RPA stuff. So that will allow you to interface older applications with things like Flow to automate a lot of processes. And that is now generally available. You can now buy a license for it and use it inside your environment to automate a lot of your stuff. And another one there is the power of AI in Microsoft 365. So there's a lot of artificial intelligence automation built in there. There's an article in there that we can put in for you to go and have a look. So even down at the desktop, Microsoft's doing a lot of stuff there as well. What else have you got on your radar there, Brenton?
Got two, actually. Let's start with the more comical one. So if anyone has skills in COBOL programming, there may be a job for you. So there's some legacy applications. I always find these legacy authentic applications hilarious. I always like learning about how, like, there's someone who wrote an application 40 years ago. They've never, ever updated it. And now there's no one else to code it. They're saying the biggest problem with COBOL programmers is they're all in the high-risk COVID group, so they're pretty difficult to find in the first instance. And, they can't really come in and work on the product without being at heightened risk of potentially dying from the disease. So anyway, I put that in there as a bit of a laugh because this unemployment process all depends on this old COBOL programming. And you can imagine how hard that's getting smashed at the moment. So it's probably a good cautionary lesson for people that you're talking to who want to hold on to their old legacy applications, and you go, this might not be you today, but it will be you eventually. So it's time to make the leap and start fixing some of these problems. And it's a good time to do it while it's quiet. And the other one left is from one of my favorite publications, Ars Technica. And Jim Slater, put up some unique things that are only in the Edge browser that aren't in Chrome that will compel you to switch. So if you haven't switched to the new Kredge or Chromium Edge, then here's some really good reasons. The last reason he's put on here is the high definition Netflix. Apparently the only way you can get 4K Netflix is with Microsoft Edge on Windows 10. I don't know why. They've got things like Edge Collections, the reading mode, the smart copy, vertical tabs, which that looks really cool, particularly if you're an ultra wide like me. I could certainly live with that vertical tabs because I got the extra real estate. So really, really cool. So check that out. If you're trying to get everyone onto Edge, they're like, oh, I like Chrome or whatever, this might get them across the line. So
like
that's all from me.
The profiles in Edge, so you can run multiple Office 365 sessions. So that's really good. So I can log into multi-tenants and not be, not have clashes and issues and token issues. I think that's, for me, that's the major thing as well. And it supports all the extensions that I use as well. So I think it's been fantastic. I also like the ability that you can apply policy to it from Intune, which helps you lock it down and again, make it more secure. So certainly if you haven't tried it, I think most Windows 10 machines have automatically updated to the new version now. So to Microsoft's credit, again, it threw away its old browsers and now, again, it seems to be getting some great success for this. So if you haven't had a look at it, I would certainly recommend it. I think it runs on just about every platform too. I think it runs back to Windows 7 if you've still got that as well. So again, Microsoft's done the right thing there. Finally got around to doing it, but again, it shows you what they can do when they focus. All right, anything else we need to cover before we wind up and let people get into our interview for this episode?
No, that's all from me.
All right. Well, how can we stay in contact with Brenton the Mayor?
Best way to get on to me is Twitter. So at Contact Brenton. You can just Google me, Brenton Johnson. I'll be the first result.
Excellent. All right. Well, you can follow the podcast at N2K Podcast on Twitter and Facebook. Feedback at needtoknow.cloud. We'll send us an email that, again, we hope that you take the time to let us know what you'd like to hear, any feedback that you've got. We welcome all of that. And myself, I'm found on the Twitter at DirectorCIA. I'll take this opportunity to thank Brenton and make sure that everybody out there stays safe. Hopefully, we'll be back with another episode when things are a little bit more positive. Fingers crossed. But until that period, I'm joined by Asif Rahmani. Welcome, Asif.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So, as always, I will get Asif to introduce himself, let everybody know who he is and what he does. So if you could do that for us, that'd be great.
Absolutely. My name, as you mentioned, Robert, is Asif Rahmani. I'm from Chicago, Illinois, United States. I've been an MVP since 2007 with Microsoft. And I love to train, mentor, and basically help people. That's what I've been doing for quite some time. I started with SharePoint in 2001, then obviously migrated with everybody else to Office 365. But anything and everything Microsoft, I love to talk about.
So I will let people know that I have been following your stuff for a long while, and I remember back in the day, and this is taking us back to prehistoric days, the stuff you used to do around InfoPath.
That's right.
And that was really fantastic at the time. It was a bit of a brain meld for me to try and work out how to use this, and then, you know, found your stuff and consumed a lot of that. So again, thanks for that. And obviously thanks for all the stuff that you are doing and being an MVP for quite a long time there. So again, appreciate the effort and work you're doing in the space. Now,
pleasure.
What I've done is I've asked Asif to come on and to talk about some of the training add-ins we can add into our environments, especially around the SharePoint Teams area, to help people get up to speed and to learn this. Because for a lot of people, all of a sudden they've moved from maybe a traditional on-prem F drive, you know, files and folders, into suddenly this new web-based world that is SharePoint, that is Teams, is very different, and that requires them to step up their knowledge. So how are we going to help them do that? Now, again, probably the place to start is a product or a service or an offering from Microsoft called Learning Pathways, which we can plug in for free into our SharePoint environment to give us a bit of training. Now, I think this is a really smart offering, a really good offering from Microsoft. What's your sort of take on this sort of service and offering from Microsoft?
I think with any manufacturer of any software, honestly, they need to serve their customers so the software could be used on a effective basis. And I think Learning Pathways offering, which it is an open source offering, obviously, and not officially supported by Microsoft, but supported by the community. But the offering itself, I think it was should have been offered a long time ago. I'm very, very glad that Microsoft did offer that to consolidate all the material that they've been producing anyway in terms of articles and videos and all, and make it available easily, accessible through a communication site that people can go to and take basically courses. So I'm glad Microsoft did that. I wish they had done it even earlier, but hey, better late than never. And definitely I've been telling people about this as well, that if you don't have anything currently and you want something for free and get started with a matter of days, you can do that with Learning Pathways.
So in your experience, obviously working in this environment and training and all that, what do you feel is sort of the biggest challenge for people coming into this environment? Is it, you know, simply getting their head around the whole thing, or working with files, or, you know, they want to customize it? What do you find is their biggest challenge once they're sort of plonked into this environment that they, you know, need a product, a training product to overcome?
Well, I come from a SharePoint background, and then from SharePoint, now, of course, looking at all different Office 365 tools. Some of the same challenges that were there in the SharePoint on-premises days are still now in SharePoint Online and everything else in Office 365. And that is, where do I go to do what? If I'm looking to gather a list of content, where do I go? What do I do? And how do I get help when I need help? I think that still remains a challenge, since Microsoft has always been a company that provides wonderful but too many tools to do some similar things. The what do I do when and how do I do it and where do I go to start is still a bit of a fear that I think end users have. So that still remains a challenge. When I'm looking at something, exactly how do I know what I'm looking at, what I should be doing, what I should not be doing, according to Microsoft and also according to my company rules and regulations, that whole dilemma still stymies end user adoption, unfortunately, still gets people to hesitate for them to do their job. I've been a big believer in the whole aspect of end users are there to get their job done. They're not necessarily looking to get trained. They just want to get their job done and be done with it. And that's been a challenge and continues to be a challenge, I feel, within the Microsoft world.
So if we have a look at learning pathways, and I've put this in for a few people and shown them, and basically to give people a bit of an idea, it's basically a site mm-hmm. collection that you put inside your environment. You create the links, you point people to it. The content is largely surfaced from other Microsoft resources, so it's kept up to date, but it's surfaced through a nice, easily to use site. Now, I would suggest, and my personal experience has been with this, is that users like it. They certainly see it. They think it's great. I mean, one of the most common questions I get from users is, "Where's the Office 365 manual?" So this is a very good way to point people. Now, one of the downsides I find is that you show it to them and they look at it, but then over time they get distracted. They want to do other things. They don't tend to come back because they have to navigate to that actual location, go to that site, like a book on the shelf. They don't pull it down and read it. I mean, is that sort of your experience as well when it comes to, you know, utilizing a tool like this?
Yeah, you know, the importance of context, I cannot emphasize enough. It's like we have a gym membership, but how many times you're going to go to the gym, you know, as opposed to if you have something right there, you go ahead and use it, lift some weights, etc. Or you have a wonderful, you know, digital camera, but you don't have it in the time when you really need it. So you pull out your phone and then you go ahead and take a picture with that. What you have available at the context of when you need something is much, much more important. Much more important than some place which is going to have an abundance of what you need, is my experience. So I've been a trainer for a very long time. I've trained developers, then administrators, and then power users, which is my InfoPath SharePoint designer days. And then I started training end users. And I realized something, which is what I alluded to before, that end users don't want to be trained. And I'll repeat that, end users really don't want to be trained. They just want to get their job done. And when they're looking to get their job done, at that point, at their moment of need, it's very difficult for them to get out from that context and go to a different context to find something that they're looking for. Makes it very difficult, even if it's available readily somewhere, but they have to actually navigate there, search there. It's an actual destination that they have to go to look for it. It's much easier when you have, even if it's not that much information, but only the stuff that you need available to you in your context. So yes, that's been definitely my experience, that users, when they find something in context of their environment, they're much more motivated as opposed to having to go to a destination to look for something.
So strangely enough, it would seem to me that there is a need in the market for this. And I would suggest that probably you have a solution to this, don't you?
Yeah, we do. We do, because of my own experience as a trainer, and our company has been focused on the context-sensitive help and context-sensitive training space for a long time. It just made sense for us to build on top of learning pathways. We partnered up. We were one of the early adoption partners in the program, officially for Microsoft. And we have a better together story where we take their content and expose it in context of the environment for the user. So when they're in their own OneDrive, their own document library, or their own Excel online or whatever, they see the context. They see the content coming from Microsoft directly in their context. And what we do, and I know verbally talking about it is, of course, not as the exact same as visual, but I'll try to just paint a story that a tab comes up on their screen. It says, "Need help?" question mark. And that just follows them around when they navigate from place to place. And whenever they click on that tab, it will show them all the information that they need to know what is OneDrive, for example, how do I change margins, and if I'm in a Word document, what is the if-look function if I'm in Excel, or things like that, things that you know that you need to know, but you don't know exactly where to find it, it's right there within that Need Help tab. You click on it, you get the information, and you use it, and you're done. It's very simple.
All right, so again, certainly recommend this. I think this is a great solution. But before we maybe dive into a little bit deeper, do you want to tell people the easy way they can get this, obviously for their browser, but also for Teams? And again, it is a free plugin for both. So why don't you just give us a bit of an idea of how they can actually step through and get this fantastic tool you've created?
Absolutely. The best and easiest way is to do a search for Visual SP. That's one word, Visual SP, space plugin. If they do a search for that, the first link that comes up actually has the download for everything. And that is, it's a browser plugin that they install in any browser, Edge, Chrome, Internet Explorer, Firefox, whatever. Once they install it, it appears for them in their browser wherever they go. That's the first thing. Within that same download page, they will also see an app that they can go to for Microsoft Teams that they can access. You can also go to Microsoft Teams directly and do a search in the App Store gallery for Visual SP, and you'll find it there. So there's an app, Visual SP. You download that, add it. Either of those things take literally 10 seconds each to add to your environment. Once you do it, it just works because it authenticates you, realizes who you are, and gives you the content directly coming from Microsoft.
Okay, so we obviously now know how to go in and install it in Teams and in our browser. And again, certainly recommend that for people, giving people the context of being able to get help exactly where they are. So why don't you give us a bit of an idea, I suppose, as to, you know, the extent of this? I mean, what when they do ask for help, what are they going to see? Is it just going to be a link to somewhere else? What sort of content are they going to see when they do ask for help?
Yeah. So as I was mentioning before, that let's say you are in OneDrive. You're looking to see, how do I share content with someone? Or how do I do a search in OneDrive? Or how do I set metadata? They do a search, or they navigate through the content available, which is, like I said, coming from Microsoft Learning Pathways through Visual SP to them. Once they find something that they were looking for, they click on the actual item, and it brings up the item directly within the context of their environment in a splash screen. There's no new tab that opens up. There's no new window that opens up. And they might seem like small things, that a new tab and a new window. So what? It's not a big deal. It is a big deal. It is a big deal for the user because the context changes. They have to go somewhere then to look for it. So we don't send them anywhere. The modal dialogue, as it's called by developers, or just a splash screen that comes up, and it shows them whichever specific video or article or something else, or whatever in the format it is in, directly on top, as a layer on top of their environment. And that helps to keep the context, keep the user in their learning, in their flow of work, as I like to call it. So their flow of work does not change. They see exactly what they want to see, and they get back to work immediately.
No, I agree with you. I think that, again, if a user is distracted by another tab, they potentially don't go to it, or they get distracted and go somewhere else. So it gives them, it sort of splits their attention or distracts exactly. them, I suppose, is another way to look at it. But if it pops up inside the environment, and again, how it sort of darkens, or you know, basically puts the focus on what they're doing. And I think the concept that I like, especially with, you know, the way that you've done it here, is this concept of micro learning. I just need to learn this. I get a video, a little bit of text, right? You know, I may be 5, 6, 10 minutes, and then I can go on and keep doing my job. So I think this concept of micro learning is really, really powerful, because at the moment, as we would appreciate, many people are very, very time poor, and look, I just need to know how to do this quickly and blah, blah, blah. So I think that is really powerful. Now, is there a way to look at it? Let's take a step back and that's great mm-hmm. for an end user. I can get the information I want. I've got it, you know, in my face, and got it when I need it, which is great. But let's take a step back and look at the business owner here. The business owner here is hopefully paying these employees to get their job done and to work. And, you know, how are they going to be able to know that these people are, you know, learning effectively or are consuming this information and not, you know, just making mistakes in the product. What's in the your offering there for the administrator?
Yeah. So our product is much, much more fully featured in addition to what we've talked about so far. The freemium part of the product, our partnership with Microsoft, is to provide all this content available free of charge. Product is free. Their content is free. Comes to the user for free. However, when a manager does have those additional needs of how do I customize things? How do I make my own content? How do I see the analytics of what people are searching for? What they're clicking on, which places they're going to, what do I need to provide them help with? For that, we have the analytics, the customization features, the management features of for the help items, for the administrators of how who do I want within my company to have the permission to change some things around and who do I not want to mess with it. All those things are premium features that provide that come with Visual SP as well.
So I think that, would you agree that probably analytics are so super important these days to actually get a feel for what's going on, but they're also so much easier now because they're baked into the one interface. But do you actually see people using them, or is it maybe something that's overlooked that they're not taking advantage of in your experience?
Analytics have been ignored, unfortunately, for quite some time in the past. In fact, even Microsoft, I think, had a wake-up call a few years back when they started seeing all that data of what is being used and what is not being used within Office 365. Microsoft became one of the biggest tenant of all these companies out there, right, providing all these services. And they realized that some of the things which seemed to be simple and straightforward that people should know about it, people were not clicking on it or they were not getting benefit from it. And then Microsoft started taking a look at the data very, very closely as a tenant, host provider themselves. And then same thing happened, I think, trickled down a lot more people within the tenancies within their environments. They started taking a look much more deeply as to what is exactly going on. And they realized the exact same thing. Once again, there's a full featured, rich set of applications and services that they're providing. They're building all these solutions, but not many people are taking advantage of some of these deep technologies. And then you start looking at what's going on? Why is the interfaces not correct? Am I not providing the right kind of help to people? What's going on? But it all starts with looking at the analytics first and then diving as to the why, the psychology, empathizing with the users, understanding exactly what they need the help on, the guidance on, and then changing interfaces or whatever else that's needed to make it simple for them. So the features that were not exposed before make it become easier for them to get access to. I agree. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think the more you begin to look at this and you look at it and you step back and look at it as a trainer or somebody who's trying to help users get up to speed, it really is interesting to actually see, as you said, the analytics, because what you think is easy turns out to be very hard for users. Yeah. Because we've been doing it, IT people have been doing it, or SharePoint people have been doing it for years. It's a natural thing to, upload something to a library or create a folder. But you overlook, again, this fact that the user, in many cases, especially today, this could be their very first experience where they're actually forced to, work totally in this environment. And that blocker, initial blocker, can have such ramifications down the track, because if they don't have a good experience initially, or they can't get over that blocker quickly, they really form this, I don't want to say hatred, but this, I don't like this product, they build this resistance to it. And I think anything that you can do to improve that, looking at the analytics and then implementing, tools like you have and the learning paths as well to overcome that, is going to be so important, I think, moving forward, especially now we're seeing such a massive need for people to move from, this old comfortable world they were in into this new modern, web interface. So, yeah, I really think the analytics are, as you say, a place to start. And that's why it's worth, investing in that and getting that sort of information, available to your managers, to the people, to make sure that the people that they're working with are fully productive. And again, you know, that's what I think is a key component if you're really serious about this and implementing, like I said, a product like you've got. So I think that's really good. Is there any other things in your experience that you've learned over the time and you've brought to your product to help overcome this you know, this learning stigma or getting people on the fast track to using the product?
I'll use the example that you mentioned, actually, of microlearning. That is super important for folks to understand that it's not just us talking about it here, but Microsoft themselves and other companies outside of Microsoft, SAP and Salesforce and everybody else is thinking about that. How do we get information to end users? We're not talking about power users and developers. We're talking about end users quickly, easily, efficiently to them. And that means if you're making videos, it's got to be approximately 2 minutes or less. If you're making articles, it's got to be right to the point where they need what they need it and be done. All those things are very important. At the end of the day, we need to truly, truly empathize with the end users and not give them the same tools that would work for IT professionals or developers, because they just don't work for end users. Many of us who have had the IT background think like IT people, and it's hard to make that turn, that pivot in our minds to understand what is important to an end user who is just trying to get their job done. They might be very super intelligent in their own profession, such as a legal profession or health or manufacturing or whatever else, but they might not have any desire to become a quote unquote Office 365 person or SharePoint person. They just want to use these tools, get their job done, and then move on to the next task. How do we help them do that the best way possible? That is, I think, the main thing that I learned many years back, and I try to tell as many people as possible to keep that in mind before designing anything.
So you have a huge amount of experience over time with the Microsoft products and SharePoint on-prem and then in the cloud, training users, training people, you know, in these environments. And you've obviously created and crafted a solution to solve many of these problems. What sort of, if you look ahead, where do you see this sort of going in general? The you know, as more people, I would assume now that we've been forced to, a lot of people have been forced to move into these online environment, which is a large mental shift. Do you feel that, okay, after a period of time, people will get the basics and they'll move on? I mean, how do you see it sort of, you know, I suppose, down the track? What are the requirements going to be? Is it going to be the same? Are users simply going to need to be taught the same things? Or are we going to have to, you know, take them to the next level? I mean, again, just looking into the future, what do you see?
Yeah, well, eventually we'll get to a point, but this is quite some time later in my opinion, where we'll start predicting what the user needs and then giving it to them before they even know that they need it. And that's where the artificial intelligence, machine learning will come into play. What I mean by that is if you have a big mass of data from, let's say, 1 million users of what they're doing in a specific interface, it's easy to predict what is important to 80% of them and what is not important. So you start surfacing that content up, you start surfacing that help up. So even before they need that thing, it just becomes available to them at the right time. Machine learning, artificial intelligence will definitely get there, but us as humans also have to pay attention to what the needs are even before that and try to understand that user behavior and then trying to serve our users, especially now in the remote scenario where you can't go to a cubicle or you can't send a memo or something like that easily to get to people. How do you get to them and help them do their job at their moment of need? We will definitely get there with all these technologies, but as humans, we also have to change our behavior to support our users before we get there from the systems and processes level, in my opinion.
Okay, well, that's a fair comment. I agree with you that the AI is going to play a more important role, and I think the signals that Microsoft's getting from a large environment now and growing environment of users is going to help them produce, you know, better results and hopefully, again, make people more and more productive. Now, in your product, are there any other, you know, hidden gems that you found that really work for people? What's some other features of, you know, your environment you've created that again, yeah, you find work really, really well to serve the needs we've talked about?
Sure. One of the things that works well with any product, including ours, in my opinion, is look at the behavior that people are already doing outside of work and try to emulate those behaviors inside their work environment. So I'll give you a very specific example. Many times when you go to our websites that we go as consumers to do our personal work, for example, you go to your bank website or you go to your auto loan and you're looking for insurance or something like that, all different things like you find help directly on the page as you need it in form of, for example, inline help or a walkthrough that comes up in a bubble that shows you, all right, you're here for the first time. I know you're here for the first time. Let me walk you through certain things that you need to know. Or if you don't need to know anything right now, the inline help with the small circle and question mark is available by the label. Maybe it's a complex label that you'll need in the future, but it's there. It's all over the internet. You know, it's in many, many SaaS applications that we use as consumers. Why not bring the same functionality within the enterprise applications that we're using? We've done that with Visual SP. So we provide a way for administrators of their environment to put inline help or to put walkthroughs which are very specific to what their users need. For example, if I'm going to a SharePoint site, we'll talk about SharePoint specifically here, I need to know who the owner for this site is, or I need to get some information that's not readily available, that's not provided by Microsoft because Microsoft doesn't know my environment. I need to know what makes sense for us. How do I open up a support ticket if I need help? Those kind of things are easily surfaceable by using walkthroughs and inline help, which our application lets administrators make extremely easily and quickly without using any code whatsoever. I've been a big believer in producing no code or low code solutions. So when we started building this application many years ago, that was something that I insisted on that we also do and make it easier for power users, business managers, intranet managers, communication specialists, enterprise managers, whatever you want to call these folks, but folks who are responsible for their users to help them, they are the ones who make these layers for their users. They don't have to go to a developer to do it because developers are always busy. They're always busy. It's good for these folks themselves to do what they need to do to help their users. And that's what we allow them to do with their product.
All right. So apart from what we've spoken about and apart from the fact that the users, people listening can go and grab some of your tools there for free. Is the best way for people to get a feel for the advanced features and what we've talked about here and what is available in the commercial versions to visit your website? Is that the best location for them to get that sort of information?
Yes, that would be the best way. So apart from, like you said, we already talked about that if they do a search for Visual SP space plugin, they'll get to the plugin page, which all the different plugins, Teams, as well as browser. However, if they want to know about all the different features, they can go to visualsp.com. From there, from the products menu, they'll see all the different specific use case scenarios and the products that we have for Microsoft Teams, for learning pathways as well, and for Office 365. As well as if they just want to communicate information to users, for example, in terms of announcements or alerts or things like that, which is very, very important these days, how they can do that. Everything is available on the website.
All right. Well, I'll make sure that all the links are in the show notes when we release the episode so you can go and look at that in more detail. I encourage you to do that. And I think that the pricing there is also so very, very cost effective. So if you do want to look at that, add it to your environment, obviously start with the free ones, get a feel for it, but I think you'd be pretty impressed. And again, if you're a manager wanting to take it to the next level, look at some of the advanced features, I certainly encourage you to go and look at those details and certainly consider this as an option. Because I think, and you probably agree with me, that probably most people being a technical background and experienced in the products, they do the migration and they typically expect the user then to just pick up and run with it. And one of the things that's generally overlooked or not invested in is training. And again, that's why obviously you've created this product. I mean, is that sort of what we're seeing in the market? You know, the expectation that users will pick this sort of stuff up rather than actually giving them that helping hand?
I was one of those people who thought that, well, I'm making amazing solutions. Obviously, people are going to use it until I learned the hard way that is not how technology works. That's not how people work. You know, it's the build it and they will come has never been true. But we just thought it was true because we didn't have the right data or we're not looking at the right data. We were just thinking, well, it's beautiful. Of course, people use it. When people like myself also started to look deeply as to what is it that people are actually using or not using, that's when our eyes opened up, like, oh my God, doesn't matter how much beautiful, wonderful, amazing tools and utilities that you give them. At the end of this, it's all going to come down to what's in it for them. You know, I like to talk about WIIFM, what's in it for them, as a radio station, Radio WIIFM, that is playing in everybody's mind. And you have to tune into that station. You have to understand exactly what they are thinking about, what's in it for them, and then align your frequency with their frequency to help them with what they're looking for. Once you do that, then everything else becomes easy. But until you do that, nothing is easy. Doesn't matter how wonderful, beautiful, amazing solutions you think you're building, they will not use it.
All right. So as we get towards the end here and begin to wrap up, what I'm going to ask you to do is, again, just share any contact details with our audience. How can they keep up with you on the social or reach out or wave hello or whatever they want to do on the socials? But as a long-term experienced SharePoint operator, a lot of people are coming into, you know, this environment, the SharePoint and Teams environment, for the very first time. Many of them may be doing it without the help of a skilled IT person in these sort of tools and services. So if you can give us maybe, you know, a couple of tips, and just for those people who are just coming into this, you know, relatively new and beginning to experience this environment, you know, what's some basics they can do, obviously, apart from adding the fantastic tools that you make available, but are there any other simple tips that they could take to make their life easier just based on your experience? So if you could do that, and also have any contact details you wish to share with people, that'd be great.
Absolutely. What I've learned in my own experience, and this goes way beyond SharePoint or even computers in general, is you only bite off what you can chew. And same thing when looking for your own customers, your own employees in this case. Give them what they need and only what they need. If you give them too many systems, too many ways of doing the exact same thing, it will turn them off. Too much is not always good. Sometimes less is more. I'm sure we've all heard that before, but I don't think we all follow that, unfortunately. In terms of Office 365, for example, if you're coming in for the first time, obviously you're going to see all the different apps, and you're going to think, oh, well, let's open everything up. Bad idea, in my humble opinion. Give people what they need and then ramp it up, instead of giving them everything, realizing a month, 6 months from now that everything is in chaos, you know, chaotic right now, and then pulling everything back. So start incrementally, give what people need, grow from there. And then same thing, as you're giving them specific tools, utilities, applications, give them the right guidance, the training, the governance, regulations, whatever they need to know as you're opening things up, so they get comfortable using these things and they keep coming back instead of looking at it for the first time and never coming back. So think about these things. In my humble opinion, these things have always, at least from what I've seen, worked. When you go complete, open everything up, that has never worked, at least from what I've seen. So that's my humble opinion. My contact information, if you do want to get in touch with me, I am on Twitter, LinkedIn, email it as well. My name, asif@visualsp.com, is the email address. Or you can go with my complete name, Asif Rahmani, one word. That's how I am in Twitter. And then just Asif Rahmani on LinkedIn as well. These are the three best ways to connect with me.
Excellent. Well, I will make sure that all those contact details are in the show notes, so people can get in contact with you, with links to the products that you have mentioned, and highly recommend that people go and have a look at the website, the videos you've got up there that actually demonstrate this. Unfortunately, we can't do justice to this necessarily in audio only. Visual is a very important component. I would also echo your statement about not overloading customers. I like to consider that Robert's rule of three is you don't give people more than three things or three changes at a time to deal with. That can be very frustrating for IT people. They just want to do everything and close the ticket and move on. This is, again, you've got to sort of ease people into it, because for them it's a massive change. You know, you just don't appreciate they've been doing, you know, Control F or Control S, you know, right, saving all their life, and all of a sudden, you know, SharePoint is automatically saving in the background, and that can be again, very confusing. So again, highly echo those thoughts as well. I will take the opportunity to thank Asif for his time today and the information that he has shared, and also on behalf of the community, the work that he is making available for free as part of this. And again, encourage people to do that, reach out to him, make contact with him, and again, consume his products. Because I think they, in this day and age, I think they are a massive value add. And again, great, and really appreciate you doing that at no cost. So again, thank you very much for being on the podcast and sharing.
Thank you very much, Robert, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Excellent. All right. Well, I thank everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Microsoft 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.